Good morning. My name is Joe Crispine. I work for Greenwich Youth for Christ. I'm the acting director there, and I've been a part of St. Michael's for about 4 years. My wife, Lauren, she was dancing earlier. She's the youth minister here. And I apologise for my voice a little hoarse. I was at Twickenham yesterday cheering for Wales. Unfortunately, yeah, they didn't quite make it. But so just bear with me if I sound a little bit hoarse at times. Greenwich Youth for Christ is an organisation which is working with young people across the borough, trying to engage them with social action, trying to meet their needs and trying to tell them a bit more about the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's an organisation that's been running for about 21 years, and I'm going to talk a little bit about GYC as I go through, but this isn't entirely about us as an organisation. If you want to know any more about them, do please speak to me. I'd love to tell you about what we're up to and what we're doing. So I didn't actually think I'd put a title down for this talk, although I did this talk, something very similar to this, at a men's breakfast I went to. And if it had to have a title, it was going to be, Am I Bothered? Or, said slightly differently, Am I Bothered? Am I Bothered? Some of you may remember the Catherine Tate character, Lauren, who she would be in a classroom and the teacher would be trying to explain something to her, make it very clear to her, and, you know, and all the response the teacher would get was, Am I bothered though? Am I bothered? Am I bothered? And I'm going to be asking that question today. Am I bothered about the things that matter, about the things of faith? And often when you're given free rein of talking about something, you end up speaking about something that, you know, is important to you or you feel you need to hear. So I know that I very much need to hear the words that are going to be shared today. This summer, as Greenwich Youth for Christ, we took a group of young people from this church and from William Temple in Thamesmead to a Christian youth festival called Soul Survivor. And as we were driving home, we asked some of the young people what was the most exciting bit or what bit really resonated with them. And pretty much all of them shared about one particular couple who we heard from. There was a couple called Joan and Titch Smith, who were a South African couple. Titch had played cricket for South Africa, and he'd also played in the UK for Middlesex. He was a professional cricketer. But during the end of his career, he'd become an alcoholic and drug dependent. And just as he was about to go into rehabilitation, the day before he was going into rehab, another cricketer, South African, called Peter Pollock, led him to faith. Now, I don't remember Peter Pollock, but I've heard of his son, Sean. And he led him to faith just as he went into rehab. Now, Titch was there. He went through the process of that. And as he came out, he told the story, and this is what was really interesting. He told a story of how he was driving around, and he just felt God, he needed to stop and just pray and cry out to God. So he spent 4 hours just in prayer, asking God what it was that he should be doing, crying out for the nation that he lived in, for his family, for himself. And he felt that God gave him a vision of orphans being cared for in family groups, in a community, and having a community which was created where jobs for young men could sustain the community. And what they do is they bring government and unbelievers together to come and see this project working. Now, that was the vision that he was given, and it wasn't until 10 years later that he actually came to fulfill that when he created with his wife something called Live Village in Natal. And the thing which was incredible about this was he was telling stories now that it's been running for about 10 years of children who they've met, who 10 years now have been through the program and are graduating school, they're going off to university, they're getting degrees, children who had no hope and who had no future. And as the guy was explaining this, you could see him tearing up, you could see him, you know, with pride at what had been achieved, but also the fact there's 5 million orphans in South Africa and there's still so much that vastly needs to be done. And of course, it was incredible. It was great to hear this guy's story. And afterwards, of course, the young people, their response is, yeah, let's go to Live Village. Let's go out to South Africa. Let's be part of this. And I'm thinking, oh, this is a logistical nightmare. But no. But the thing that was really challenged me and the thing that really struck me and resonated me with this was I was watching this guy speak and I was thinking, I'd love to be that bothered about something. I'd love to care that much about it that I'd sell my business, that I'd move my house and my wife and my family onto something like that. I'd love to be just shooken to the core that much that my life would look like that. And I was left sort of asking the question, what would my life look like if I was that bothered about my relationship with God, about my calling, about the vision that he's given me? What would Greenwich Youth for Christ look like if I cared for that as much as I did my family, my finances, my eBay business, my children's education? I don't have any children, but I do have a dog. She sort of counts. Do Do our efforts and priorities reflect what we want to, or does it paint a very different picture of who we are and what we want our faith to mean to us? Would someone looking in from the outside know that I'm a Christian, know that things of faith mean something to me? If you're anything like me and you're asked, like, what does your faith mean to you, you sort of, you're caught on the hop sometimes, but it sort of, you want it to mean everything, I think. I think I want my faith to mean everything to me. It's the reason I live the way I do. It's the reason I've got the job I've got. It's the reason I try to live my life in a way that honours God. But, you know, how real is that? Are those just words? Or to quote my wife, what does that practically look like, Joe? Too often, it's easier to say something than to actually deliver on it. And if, you know, when it comes to telling my wife that I love her, if that's all it took, I'd be the most loving husband out there. But unfortunately, it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than saying and wanting, isn't it? You actually have to put things into practice. You actually have to follow through on some of the things that you've said you're going to do. And the amazing thing is that we can get really motivated about certain things, can't we? Have you ever lived with somebody who's training for a marathon or getting married or about to have a baby or any of those things? It just totally consumes them, and then it ends up consuming you. You know, they want to tell you about it. They want to tell you about their training patterns, about their blisters, about what they're going to wear, all these things. We can get really passionate and really, you know, really motivated by certain things. But can we get bothered about our faith in the same way? Is the first thing we reach for in the mornings our Bible reading notes? Or is it our phones to check the emails that we need to attend to before work? Is it to see if I've sold anything on eBay overnight? Or are we thinking and waking with God on our hearts and on our minds? It's too easy to think we don't have time, but Tim Keller, in his latest book on prayer, writes an interesting analogy. He says if there's a life-threatening illness which you had, and you had to take a tablet and just sort of spend 10 minutes every night taking that tablet to carry on living, of course you'd do it. Of course you'd make the time for that. You know, you'd have a contingency plan in place if you forgot the tablet or if you were going somewhere, all these things. Of course you'd do it. We've got time. Time isn't the issue. It's slightly out of the context because our readings were the second reading was talking slightly about finances. But, you know, where your heart is at, your treasure will be also. Where is our heart at? What is the most important thing in our lives? Does something need to change? There's a sentence which we use at GYFC sometimes when we're thinking about what we're going to be doing next or what programs we're going to operate or do. And it's, if you always do what you've always done, you're always going to get what you've always got. Nothing really changes, does it, unless we're going to make an effort to do something about it. Within an organisation like Youth for Christ, though, we're quite fortunate that we have people who almost give us like a MOT or a checkup as a centre, so we get to sort of think, where are our priorities? Are they in the right place? And a sentence which you hear from Youth for Christ nationally, which I really can't take to, but they say, is that we need to keep the main thing the main thing. Now, the reason I don't like that, I think it's pretty obvious, but it does have its merits. As an organisation, Greenwich Youth for Christ, is reaching young people relevantly with the gospel the main thing? Or have we been guilty of what they call in Youth for Christ missional drift, where we're doing something slightly different from that? We might just be delivering some sort of good social action projects, and we might just be meeting a few needs. Have we lost our drive to be missional? And within this, the daft thing is that Greenwich Youth for Christ, when we apply for grants and we apply for bids and funding, we have to put on there our charter. And the main thing, the first thing we have to write on all these grants and these bids is that we want to see young people reach relevantly with the gospel. And quite often that sort of counts against us when it comes to getting funding, because fair enough, certain trusts or agencies don't want to fund that kind of work. But then when it comes back to us, are we then not then doing the thing which we're being penalised for? It just seems really daft. So as an organisation, we need to be doing the things that we're saying we're going to be doing, especially if we're going to be penalised for doing them, if that makes sense. You know, and it reads me on to sort of the reading. When as an organisation we do start to drift away from that, do we start to look lukewarm? Lukewarm as an organisation, lukewarm as individuals. In the reading in Revelation, it comes across as a little bit harsh, doesn't it? Just because we're not hot, you're going to spit us out of your mouth. You would rather that we be cold than trying and being warm. And I was trying to think of an analogy that sort of made any sense of this. And we had the St. Michael's cricketers curry this week, and it was at that somebody reminded me of a particular story. And I can tell this story because the person's no longer part of this church. They've moved away, so I can embarrass them, and it doesn't really matter. But you know, those great stories of sort of, you know, match-defining catches and seven not outs and stuff like this. But the story which I'm going to tell us about, there's a guy called Richard King who used to play for St Michael's cricket team. And one time he was playing, he was out and he'd been batting for about, he'd faced about 30 balls and he'd scored about six runs. And at this point, he decided that he was going to volunteer, he was going to declare himself out because he was causing such damage to the team's chances of winning. You see, he was there and he was batting and he was scoring sort of like a one here, a two there, you know, sort of dribbling along. He looked the part. He could play a few shots and stuff like this, but it was just so slow. He was just lukewarm. His innings just wasn't really doing anything. And sometimes I was sort of struck by that question. Is that what our faith looks like? It'd be better for someone to come in to just sort of have a few shots, take a few shots. Maybe they get out first, second ball. But, you know, at least they've come in, they've had a go. It's a bit like England yesterday needing 99 runs. It would have been terrible if, you know, Alistair Cook had come out and just played a nice sort of solid 20 runs, you know, and England end up falling way short. Come out, give it a go. Don't just sort of nudge and nurdle the ones and twos and just sort of get mixed up in this thing. In cricket, I mean, Richard King may have experienced it or may have had people shouting it at him from the sideline, but there's the phrase, you know, get in or get out. You know, do something or just get out. And he took it upon himself to come out. That was great. Or, you know, go big or go home. Or the generation which I work with, YOLO, you only live once. You've only got one chance. Now, when we read this sort of verse in Revelation, it's effectively saying that, isn't it, about being lukewarm. It's saying get in or get out. It's saying either we take this seriously or what's the point? Or it's offensive. Now, please don't hear me for this. I'm not saying for 1 minute that St Michael's adopts the tagline get in or get out for its mission action plan or something like this. Because we need to be clear that the church is being spoken to. It's the people who have made a commitment. And GYC, St Michael's are both wonderful places where they do accept people. They accept people from all walks of life, and it's strictly seasoned, so I can say it, you know, who are on a journey and at different places in that journey. And that's wonderful, and that's what we're about. We're about accepting people, and we're about leading people on, and the hope is that they come to faith. But the people who are being challenged in this verse are the Christians, are the people who have made a commitment already, people who have made a commitment to follow Christ, to love him, to love God and love those around us. We are the ones who need to hear the warning about being lukewarm. Does Christianity define me, or is it just another small defining point of me? Something to keep quiet about and to myself, like my 1950s collection of Hornby trains up in the loft, which I love, and I realise it's a little bit odd and geeky, so I just sort of keep to myself and wouldn't really share it with others if I had to. Now, for GYFC as an organisation, recognising when we've become lukewarm or recognising that we've drifted is something, as I say, we're able to check up on and we're able to do. And Charles Spurgeon, the 19th century theologian, preacher, Baptist guy, so I have to go back to my Baptist roots, you know, he said something about the church. He addressed the church which looks lukewarm. And if I'm honest, I read through this and I felt that I couldn't say all of these. I felt that I had to delete some of these because it's so challenging to us as like an organization, Greenwich Youth for Christ, to the church and to individuals. And this is what he said. He said of the church, an earnest warning against lukewarmness. They have prayer meetings, but there are few present, for they like their quiet evenings home. When more attend the meetings, they feel very dull, for they do their praying very deliberately and afraid of getting too excited. They're content to have all things done decently and in order, but vigour and zeal are considered a little vulgar. They may have schools, Bible classes, preaching rooms, and all sorts of agencies, but they might as well be without them, for no energy is displayed and no good comes of them. Everything is done half-hearted, listless, dead and alive way, as if it doesn't matter, much whether it does or not. Things are respectably done. The rich families are not offended, the sceptical party is conciliated, and the good people are not quite alienated. Things are made pleasant for all around. The right things are done, but as to do them with all your might, soul and strength, a Laodicean church has no notion of what that means. They're not so cold as to abandon their work or to give up their meetings for prayer or to reject the gospel. If they did so, then they could be convinced of their error and brought to repentance. But on the other hand, they are neither hot for the truth, nor hot for conversion, nor hot for holiness. They're not fiery enough to burn the stubble of sin, nor zealous enough to make Satan angry, nor fervent enough to make a living sacrifice of themselves upon the altar of their God. They are neither hot nor cold. Wouldn't it be great to be able to write sermons like that? Wow. Challenging, isn't it? Challenging to us as individuals, challenging to us as a church, and I say challenging to an organisation like Greenwich Youth for Christ. So we've heard some of the warnings here, but what can we do about it? That's always the challenge. How do I get my priorities right? How do I avoid being lukewarm? Where do I get my treasure in the right place? How do GYC as an organisation keep the main thing the main thing? And I think, in, like so many things in life, it's just making time for the things that matter. Now that is, St. Michael's can use that one, we do use that. Making time for the things that matter. It's about being disciplined. There is no quick fix, is there? If it was easy to go to gym, to a marathon, to go on a diet, to study for an exam, we'd all be super fit, super brainy, super, of course we would, wouldn't we? But things are hard, things are difficult. Making time for the things that matter is a sacrifice, it's not easy. And sometimes it is simply as much as saying, you know what, if this means as much as it does to me, if I can get an understanding of what Jesus did for me, I want to be hot for this, I don't want to be lukewarm. So as I just want to finish, if you take away nothing from this, there's one thing that I would say try and remember, and if you can put the slide up, that'd be great, Douglas. There we go. Alcohol, because no great story ever started with a salad. Okay, let me just clarify this. Okay, I think we need something to clear up. Basically, saying that great things don't happen when we're eating salad. When we're nudging and nurdling the ones or twos. Great things don't happen when we're lukewarm and lackluster. I know the young people I work with would see right through that. I'm not advocating that we become alcoholics. What I'm saying is that rarely do things happen by mistake. You take Titch and Joan Tash. It didn't just happen by them sort of lethargically just sitting in church, just being part of what was going on around them. You'd look at people like Spurgeon, like Wesley, great movements, great revivals in the church. They don't happen by just eating a salad. Where is my heart at? Does faith matter to me? Is it enough that I would order my life around it? Am I just playing, or do I need to challenge myself and look at what it means to me? Do I need to rethink my priorities and take ownership of my faith? Let's not be a church or a people who are just okay eating salad.